Blog Talk Radio.
I'll bring you on in.
All right.
Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and today's date is April 26th in the year 2023. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have to tell you, but the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses, develop capacity and initiative for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African-American community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now with its economic impact on Black America. You also know if you join us on a regular basis that this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you're listening to that initiative over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We are streaming Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and we can also be heard on iTunes. Also, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and you can get more information on that organization by logging on to blacksinsolar.org. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very exciting show for you today. I have a very, very dear friend who has served in a number of capacities in the energy industry. But I'm not going to waste a whole bunch of time, ladies and gentlemen, because we've got some serious issues surrounding this industry. And I want to bring right on to our live audience, Mr. Tracy Woods, who is the former vice president of operations for the American Association of Blacks in Energy. He's moved on now, and he's with Solargen and another company. He won't be speaking so much from his company standpoint today, but I wanted to get overview from Mr. Woods, Brother Woods, on how he views the implementation of the Justice 40 Initiative, which came out of Executive Order 13985, which was the first thing Biden did when he came to office 2 years ago. Now, he's announced his re-election, the Build Back Better, which most of us are familiar with those words, and the Inflation Reduction Act that have been passed there has been billions of dollars going out of all six federal agencies. African-American companies are applying for these opportunities, and a lot of these opportunities, they're just not getting these grants. So with that being said, good morning, Brother Woods. Thank you for taking time from your very, very busy schedule to come back on our platform, Solar Now in the Future, with its economic impact on Black America. And you have the airways, brother. Could you just please sort of share with our listening audience a little on your background, where you are now, and your view of this Justice 40 initiative as it relates to African Americans in this energy space?
Indeed. Now, Brother Ryan, first of all, I want to thank you for the invitation. And anytime I get an invitation, a chance to speak with you, I try to find a way to connect with you. So I applaud you. You are an icon, very knowledgeable on all things energy. So I'm excited to spend some time with you. As you know, we connected when I was at Abe. So before Abe, I had been in the energy industry several decades. So I'm a power engineer by training, Drexel Dragon, a graduate of Drexel University, and had spent a good bit of time in the industry in various operational capacities in the utilities, PECO Energy, Philadelphia, Jersey Central Power and Light out near the Jersey coast. And then my last utility post was in Con Edison in New York, working in steam plants and crews in the street. So then I came to Abe, where you and I met, and I was there for about 9 years and really waded into the space that you are so familiar with when we talk about energy policy as it relates specifically to Black and brown communities. So I love the way you queued up the conversation this morning about President Biden and the first act he did with the Justice 40 initiative. And we're fortunate now because, you know, it is an executive order, and we are fortunate to have the funding follow. And you mentioned the legislation that he signed, and it's been followed with funding. But to your point, we in our community always have to remain vigilant because, as you've been sharing, when we look at the contracts and grants, who's won what, and, you know, as you've educated me around, there's some gaps in terms of the number of Black firms that have applied and won the grants. So I'm sure we're going to, you know, I know you've done some research and deeper dive on that, and I think we have a lot to bring to our community, and really, as always, a call to action to ensure that we're at the table.
Well, Brother Woods, what's concerning to me is back on February the 22nd, 2023 of this year, at the Department of Energy, they hosted a summit, all-day summit, which me and you had an opportunity to reconnect, targeting African Americans. And the week before then, they had a Latino energy summit at the Department of Energy. Now, Secretary Jennifer Granholm's, I mean, all kudos go off. I'm a big fan of Mrs. Shalonda Baker and Mrs. Shalala Marcette. These sisters are doing a yeoman's job over at the Department of Energy. They're over the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at the Department of Energy. And I sort of took my time, and I watched the Latino summit as well as I was physically present at the summit, which was targeted to our community. And the troubling part that I had was Jennifer Brand Holmes opened up on February the 15th in her statement to the Latino community about Puerto Rico receiving $1 billion from the Department of Energy, which is needed, which is deserved, to put the infrastructure, energy infrastructure, back in place on the island. And I understand and know, because of a number political issues that were going on in the island, and how people got contracts that shouldn't have received those contracts, and a lot of that information went national through mainstream media. But what was more concerning was the senator from California, the Hispanic senator who took over the vice president's position. I'll think of his name in a second. Vice President Pamela Harris, he actually took her seat. He spoke at that Latino Energy Summit, and she had another congressman, Latino congressman, to speak. I thought that was excellent. And she also said that they worked with her in writing the Inflation Reduction Act. The question is, when we had the week later, we had the summit. No one from the Congressional Black Caucus spoke to our African-American-based firms. And this is what I want our community to understand. According to the data put out by an organization called the Solar Foundation and the Solar Industry Trade Association, SEIA, headed by Mrs. Abigail Hopper, when you begin to look at the numbers, and when we began to look at where this all started in 2007, as it relates to specifically the solar area, because solar is not new. It's been around since the early days of Sputnik, which is the beginning of our space exploration. But until Katrina hit New Orleans and a brilliant African-American brother by the name of Van Jones wrote the Green Jobs Act and was able to get it codified through Congress in 2007, under Republican administration at that time, Bush Jr., the industry took off in 2008 when we as African-Americans went to the polls in untold numbers and voted Barack Hussein Obama into office. His biggest accomplishment, a lot of people have talked about the health care bill, but very few people, and a lot of people slept on the Sunshine Identity Initiative. It put $500 million. When Obama came into office after he was elected in 2008, $10 million for workforce development training went out the door for each and the District of Columbia. Now, as I indicated in when I started my preface in my statement, is that the Solar Trade Association and the Solar Foundation tracks the numbers around. By the end of Obama's second term, we were talking about numbers of 5% of African Americans being in the workforce, when the numbers back in 2008 and 10 were around 8% for the Hispanic community. Today, if we fast forward, we're talking around 15% for African Americans in the solar industry. And we're talking 20% for Hispanics. When we began to look at the impact of this, what does this say to our community? Because people can like it or love it, but the African-American community are not benefiting from any civil rights movement that took place in the 60s by the Hispanic community that broke down barriers of racism and Jim Crow. When we began to look at the father of the 8A program who hailed from Philadelphia, I'll think of his brother's name, he's a true legend and trailblazer, who wrote the first 8A contracting minority set-aside law for the city of Philadelphia and got this stuff implemented. We began to look at these issues, and we know for a fact that had it not been for our generation, the baby boomers and the generations before us, the doors of opportunity that everybody's has benefited from that movement. White women are now considered minorities on the 8A contracting. Latinos communities have moved forward through the same vehicle of struggle that our people, blood, sweat, and tears. So when I begin to look at our vote and the politics that are surrounding everything, because Congress has the power of the purse, where are we exactly when I look at the fact that last year, through the Good Jobs Challenge, through the Department of Commerce, $500 million was in that particular one initiative or opportunity. 8 HBCUs filed 11 different applications for workforce development training in different areas of concentration, some cybersecurity, some, but only two were in energy out of the 11 applications, with North Carolina A&T and Tougaloo College. Now, the application filed by Tougaloo, as president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, we pulled that collaboration group together, which was composed of Sundial Solar of Jackson, Mississippi, Mr. Will Shirley's company, out of Atlanta, Global Apprenticeships, two young brothers there have a contract with the Department of Labor to place young people in the energy industry in the jobs after they receive their training and receive their NAPSEP certification. From Washington, Columbus, Georgia, we had Ms. Chanel Winifred with Solar Times USA, Washington, D.C., WDC Solar, Mr. Mark Davis's firm, Baltimore. We had Mr. Robert Wallace's firm partnering with Cherie Brooks and NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis in Power 52. We went after a $19 million grant to train 1,000 of our young people in how to become energy artists, how to become electricians for EV charging, wiring and construction, how to become solar installers. Well, we weren't successful in receiving the grant, but North Carolina A&T, which I'm grateful that they did receive the grant. They were the only one to receive a grant, $23.7 million. Now, we're talking about out of $500 million, Brother Woods, that went out the door. Only two applications in the area of energy. But North Carolina A&T received the grant because they partnered with Siemens Energy and Duke Energy, two of the truly giants in the U.S., in the utility space. So how does the Biden administration, how do they justify that, my brother? So, and probably you may be able to share some examples yourself, but I'm just sharing this because I am receiving emails on a daily basis from the 35 African-American solar installations and design firms doing business in 2023 out of over 11,000 companies doing business. We have less than 40 African-American-based firms. How do we sort of justify that? Because truly the grant that was going to Tuvalu would have been a tremendous jumpstart for these small African-American minority firms in terms of the largest grant that would have ever been received of its kind with 100% African-American participation. Because we always hear what we're not doing, but when we do something and we get shot in these companies, we were denied this opportunity, even though we can reapply, but that ain't what Justice Party is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be those who need it the most, who deserve the opportunity. It seemed like they needed our votes the most to get over the hump. So I'm trying to connect the dots because everybody's jumping on equity and what the administration has done. And I have to go along with this article that was just written. Can Biden repair his climate image? Because his administration has made some damn real snafus as it relates to decision on opening up the leases in Alaska for drilling for oil and things of this nature. But, I mean, when I began to look at the energy industry, whether it be traditional market, I call them controllers, such as the gas, oil, and coal industry that controls, 85% of market share of energy around this country? How can we say to our young people, you go to school, you get an education, you do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. But if our firms cannot get the actual funding to put forth their ideas in the marketplace, where do we go from here other than back to our legislative members in Congress? Brother Woods, can you address that?
Well, I'll tell you, you touched on a number of really important topics, Brother Ryan, and I'll try to do it and respond to the most that I can. So you did mention the Hispanics and Energy. That was a policy summit. A lot of more policymakers at that summit than we had with DOE a minority MBE, with the MBE summit, where you mentioned Shalonda Baker, who's doing a masterful job, and Shalaya Morissette, again. And their focus was really to address the issues you raised, to have for DOE, for the Department of Energy, to facilitate diverse businesses, minority businesses being in the room and interacting not only with DOE and the team that you mentioned there, because there's, Shalonda Baker, Shalaya Morissette, Tony Reams is also actually at DOE. But get them in the room, because a lot of times, as you said, they're, diverse firms are competing for these grants, but they needed to have some contact not only with DOE, but connecting with some of the other MBEs. And as we saw, that happened. You brought up a good point about grant submissions, right? You're keeping authorities honest in terms of, okay, so the money hit the street, and then you do the accounting, to see who prevailed in these grants. And I think, succinctly, that holding the authorities accountable is what we continue to have to do. Brother Ryan, we talked about it before, you've been in this for quite some time. And before this funding out of the Biden administration, but it's been 50 years since we had any funding for infrastructure projects in, you know, quite a bit of time since there's been energy-related funding. And we all know that when the funding hits the street, there is a lot of just jostling and competing and pushing to get in and get secure this funding. And that's where those of us who are advocates for diverse communities have to remain vigilant to ensure that by an executive order around Justice 40 gets done. And as you mentioned, 40% of the benefit of that funding is supposed to 40% of the benefit is supposed to accrue to communities that have either been left out of opportunities in the past, and that's you know your topic here, or negatively impacted. And so, and we've got to hold the administration accountable for that, you know, because that whole conversation about 40% of the benefit is at issue.
Right.
One of the things you mentioned, A&T, North Carolina A&T, their partnership with Duke and Siemens. That's something that I, in my read of the funding announcement, Brother Ron, it encourages collaboration, where either collaborating with a utility, you know, because they're in the majority of communities, certainly where black and brown communities, right? And then you see Siemens and OEM and working with a number of energy-related technologies, right? So that, you know, they were successful, and that is a model. And, you know, we still, I think at the end of the day, it's what you do every day, because I've seen you challenge, speak truth to power, and challenge the industry to live up to what they verbalize many times. You're right. We, you know, there have been several studies, and you've referenced a few, where when we take a look at renewable energy, and part of what I know Shalonda Baker advocates is if we use the same methodology in renewable, in this transition to renewable, if we do the same things we did in the development of fossil fuel economy, we're going to get the same inequities, right? Because that's what it's about, the same inequities. And so I'm certain of her stance at the DOE and others. But when you talk about funding, we've got to hold, you know, accountability. We've got to hold folks for accountability. And I know you're on top of that part of it, too. You mentioned civil rights. You know, for advocacy organizations, you know, those organizations who advocate for communities, we've gotten the most leverage when we're collective, right? So this should be an agenda that we all can agree to, because it is the reason why, part of the reason why Biden wrote this, he didn't pull it from thin air. He knew that when we talk about energy and everybody in the U.S., well, not everybody, but majority have some sort of energy bill, right? But when you look at diverse communities, those are communities that you know, are typically negatively impacted. That's where the power plants are. That's where certain pollutants are, and where the economic opportunity had not been. So I say that because, you know, all advocacy organizations should be able to connect. You've got the data. I mean, nobody's got more data than you. But to connect and to really join you in your advocacy efforts, you know, because I know what you do, where you, you know, hold folks accountable. Here are the numbers, because the data is what should drive these conversations, you know, not just a feel-good conversation, but, hey, this is what's happening. here are the numbers. Here's who's getting the funding. And that's what you do.
Well, but in other words, not to cut you off, I mean, we have some brilliant minds in the African-American community. Dr. Denise Fairchild with Emerald City's collaboration group, she wrote a piece called "We Need 100% Solution." In response to the Justice 40, she warned our people in that document that she eloquently laid out about the issues of racism in our cities as relates to our unions, the issues, and they're just as much alive today as they were 20, 30 years ago. And the opportunities in there, and she laid out a plan of action. Now, people can find that on our website. It's called the 100% Solution, which Dr. Fairchild wrote that 2 years ago almost. It's been over 2 years ago, but what brings it comes back to mind is 2 years ago, brother, was when you were still at AIDS, we reached out to the Department of Energy to have the Secretary of Energy, Mrs. Jennifer Graham Holmes, and they seemed to indicate to me that there was a so-called scheduling snafu where she couldn't sit in front of her computer for an hour and give our African-American African-American owned firms an opportunity to raise questions that we had already submitted to her concerning their concerns in all of this and where this thing is going. In the planning phase of this, it seems to me that the administration, the Biden administration, they came up with the executive order. They put the executive order, then they had to structure that. Well, you got to hire people and bring people in. Well, the bottom line is, where were our people at the table, and where was the, our legislation? Because as you elegantly stated, a public policy drives dollars. So we got to try to get this right. Now, I only you 30 minutes, Brother Woods, and 30 minutes has already passed. So do you have a few more minutes you can share with our listening audience?
Yes, Brother Ron, I'll extend because the topic is so important. I mean, you did talk about, accountability. And one of the things that I'm aware of are these community benefits plans. And I'm sure you know about these where anyone receiving grant funding, particularly from the DOE, but I believe it's across the administration. Well, in the case of DOE, those that are successful in winning grants, part what hinges on their success is a negotiated community benefits plan. And in that, the developer has to engage with the diverse communities, in proximity of the grant, and then it's negotiated what the community sees as a benefit. So you remember the I'll call them the bad old days where a developer would receive funds, and they would determine what they thought the benefit to the community was. What is different now in the funding that's coming out of the administration is the developer has to sit down, negotiate with the community, and sometimes it is about the supply diversity, which diverse businesses are going to be a part of. So you got the major grant, and there needs to be some collaboration, joint ventures, subcontracting, something. Sometimes it is about supplier diversity. Other times it's about jobs, workforce development. So you're going to you got these this funding from the DOE. How are you going to engage the diverse workforce in the potentially the construction of the project, but then also sustain? What jobs are they going to have? And it's those community benefits plans are legally enforceable. So if there's a failure to comply or do everything that's in the community benefit plan, then the community can take the developer to court. I see that as a new evolution. Don't have any examples of what's been written, but I'm sure we can get that from the from these agencies. And that's another area, Brother Ryan, with its accountability written into the funding opportunity and into the award. And we can track that to see, and that I think that evolution, that change, this new item, is to ensure that Justice 40 happens. Because you and I know, if it's not if it's not written where folks can be held accountable, it historically has not occurred. It hasn't happened. You know, far too often we've been on the short end of that conversation. So, just as you talked, I thought about that's one way. Because you're bringing up the good point. You know, what gets measured gets done. If we're measuring, if we're tracking, if we're holding folks, this is, you know, it's denominated in dollars, and so we got to ensure that there's participation. Because you're right. If the money is the street and there's no accountability, we're going to get what we always got.
Well, Brother Woods, you know, there are so many different things affecting this energy industry. We understand that people don't change affects their bottom line. And when you begin to look at the nuclear energy, you have Exelon. When we begin to look at the gas and oil industry and our major players in those industries, to combat climate change, and this is what this is about. We've got to get the emissions out of the air. Everybody's going to need a boat. But what's disturbing to me, as I look at the way that the politics is played out between what we, for our listening audience, regulated markets is a market where the utility companies control the price of energy, the transmission of energy, and the distribution of energy. Those are called regulated markets. When we begin to look at where our African-American populations are based, they're in the Deep South, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Maryland. All of these states where we have the largest percentage of African-American population base, except Maryland, and I think each state is passing what they would call renewable portfolio standard legislation. And for our listening audience, it means each state had to submit, because the U.S. Senate passed legislation requiring by 2025 that all 50 states must submit renewable portfolio standard legislation as to how they're going to combat climate change, and what that means, how much energy is going to be coming from renewable sources, whether they be coming from nuclear, hydroenergetics, water, wind or solar, biofuels, green hydrogen, et cetera. When we begin to look at this discussion, and I'm looking at an article right now that's speaking to the 2023 Community Power Scoreboard, which was put out by the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and they have provided a scoreboard on how states rank, on how your state can get a community power score, policies that help communities take advantage of energy features, consumer-friendly net metering policies, simplified interconnection rules to encourage distributed renewables, require utilities for renewable procurement to include distributed resources, allow shared community renewable energy, allows pick their own energy supply, property assess energy financing. All that sounds good, Brother Woods, but here in Maryland, where I am, as a resident, article broke, utility companies have billed, overbilled Maryland residents $1 billion, and we're supposed to be in a deregulated market. So when we begin to looking at issues is when we look on our gas, water, and electric bills and we see these fees and we clearly don't understand what they are because most people cannot read their utility bills because they're not teaching it in school. No longer teaching civics, but these things are important. So when we begin to look at a city, our nation's capital, where we have the most valuable, what we call energy credits in the world, they're known as RECs. They're traded every day on the commodities market. It takes 1,000 kilowatts to make 1 kilowatt hour. These kilowatt hours are valued at $325 a kilowatt hour. That's what they're trading for on the commodities market. And then we get the issue of the utility companies deactivating the data sharing option on what we would call our smart meters for over 14 million U.S. citizens who have installed PV systems on their roof, whether it be small businesses, churches, or homeowners. How do we educate or get our people to understand the importance of energy, Brother Woods?
Yeah, wow. I'm telling you, Brother Ron, you, again, as I said, you keep track of everything and a storehouse of knowledge in terms of what's going on. It actually starts with programs like this. You know, one, because like I said, you're knowledgeable and can break down many of those issues that impact everybody in our community, but we're not hearing it in places. We're not aware of it. And so when you look at your platforms and your platforms, I mean, again, just going on your website, you see information that your typical energy customer is not aware of. You know, what I used to say is everybody gets a bill and we tend to just pay the bill to the extent that we can. You know, some of us struggle. In fact, in terms of it doesn't come in your bill envelope, the things that you just shared, the education around this energy industry, which is capital intensive and we don't know about it. So you talked about regulated utilities, right? And the regulator has that knowledge, that information, I should say. And I appreciate you, again, pointing our community to these sources of information, you know, because that's really it. It's bringing, making folks aware, as you do, about, you know, here's what's going on. Like you said, net metering and why it's important, why that data associated with it is important, and what's going on impacting the data for every person with a meter on their dwelling. Right, those are the things that you're making folks aware of, and that's important. You mentioned regulated utilities, and while they have a regulator, it does get back to the elected officials because the regulator will regulate around what's law in the various states, and you and I know how that can change. You mentioned Maryland. But, you know, the legislators in each state set the tone for the regulator, and our community needs to know that. They need to know who's on the regulatory commission, how many folks, what are the issues before them that you share and educate around. They need to know their legislature and what the legislature is putting in tariff for that regulator. Because so many people that I have dealt with, Brother Ron, when, you know, they say, well, now I'm going to call the utility, which, as a customer, certainly, that's a valid call. But who does the utility respond to? Who regulates that utility? And then who writes that legislation?
The Public Service Commission, my brother.
I mean, you're spot on. And even that process, Brother Ryan, I know you do a good work in making, you know, helping our community to be aware. This is how it works. You know, that's such a huge conversation, you know, because we pay that bill and we don't often know how it works or who to call when it's not working right for us, you know? Yeah.
Well, Brother Woods, I'm looking at the clock. It's 11:45. I was able to get 15 minutes over, so I appreciate your time, my brother, because I know how valuable it is. Could you please share with our listening audience some closing comments and points of interest and things that you would like to share with them? Because I always try to be very respectful of my guests' time, and Brother Woods, I'm very, very much appreciative of you taking time from your very, very busy schedule to join us this morning.
Oh, certainly. Brother Ryan, I appreciate the invitation. If I had anything to close on, it's just, you know, I applaud the work that you do. I would say to the listening audience that being connected with you and your endeavors, your platform, is like being in a library, okay? For those of us who recognize the value of data and knowledge, what you bring to our community is literally invaluable. There's not a time when I've engaged with you where I haven't learned, okay? A lot. I mean, I have a notebook and I just jot down the things that you say. So we have you as a resource in our community. I would say to folks, certainly engage and tell others, because funding that came with the three most recent laws that President Biden signed, this funding is hitting the street. It will continue to hit the street over the next decade. And shame on us as a community if we don't connect with folks like yourself and organize and ensure that the historic underserving does not continue. We have an opportunity because of the way you educate to really hold authority accountable in numbers, you know, and so it cannot be just Ron Bethea by himself out here without the community rallying around. You're bringing light and knowledge, and so we as a community have to rally around and support that and show up in ways with you. So that's why I'm always happy to spend the time and have conversations, and I appreciate the invitation.
Brother Woods, thank you for taking time. You're being very, very busy scheduled to be a guest here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. As you know, brother, you have an open invitation. Anytime you need my platform, all you got to do is give me a text or email or call. So with that being said, thank you, Brother Woods, and you have a blessed day.
All right. You too, Brother Ron. God bless.
That was Tracy Woods, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a slight pause for the calls, and we'll be right back here on Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We're going to be cutting our program short this week. So we hope that we brought you news that you can definitely use here on Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. If you want to, you'll be able to log on to our website. You'll be able to listen to that. Please go to our news and events tab. I'm going to be on a webinar in about 10 minutes, so I have to sort of cut our show short today. With that being said, We hope you enjoyed this version. We don't want you to meet us here. We want you to meet us back here next week as we will share with our listening audience another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Until next week, we say go in peace as we conclude another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. What to do with your life. You're a fool if you think